think the last one I saw was the one with the fat coming out of people's body and walking around. The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 300, recorded on March 3rd, 2013.
Welcome to the 300th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 134th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Paul S. Novak.
I am Jordan Lund.
I am Dan Quick.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
Together, we form the VGRT Gaming Podcast, which focuses on game news from around the industry and includes both listener feedback and gaming flashback segments.
Right. So, as you probably already guessed, we have Dan Quick back for the 300th episode. I tried to get Dark Schammer back, but he's not available, meaning he's not interested in doing it. Anyways.
The truth is a bitch.
Yeah, well. Anyways, so this is 300. It's a memorable episode. Hopefully it'll be a memorable episode. And
all memorable episodes, Jonah.
This is sort of playful, hostile banter that you've enjoyed for the past, I would say, 100 episodes. That's my estimation with Jordan and, well, actually 95 episodes with Jordan and Paul. And that's because the podcast transitioned at around 205. First, it transitioned at 200 when...
It used to be filled with love and cuddles before we got here.
Well, not really, no. If you listen to the episodes with Jennifer, Don, and Derek, but, you know, I mean, the show has gone through its own transition. No need to go to John Hopkins. It's been, you know, it's been great so far. And basically, I married two podcast audiences, although one was a lot smaller than the other, and I'm talking about the VGRT. I mean, I just can't say it's 100. We're celebrating the 134th episode of Video Game Roundtable. Woohoo! 134. What? It adds up to 8.
Well, wait a minute, Joan. You kind of just did that.
What?
You kind of just celebrated that it was the 134th episode of Video Game Roundtable by saying that.
You know, but there is a little happy coincidence here because the 300th edition comes on March 3rd, and the year is 2013. You have a 333 there.
Is that proof of Half-Life 3?
I know that's what you want, Jordan, but it's... I really don't care about Half-Life Episode 3 or Half-Life 3 anymore. I mean, Valve can go to blazes for all I care.
Well, we already know Valve can't count to 3, so, you know, there's the problem right there.
Yeah. Oh, dip.
Yeah. That's been stuck in Jordan's craw for a very long time. Anyways, we do have a gaming flashback. Jordan, take it away.
Gaming flashback, Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance. Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance is an action role-playing game released for the PlayStation 2 in 2001, the Xbox and GameCube in 2002, and the Game Boy Advance in 2004. It was developed by Snowblind Studios and published by Interplay Entertainment. The gameplay is based on the third edition Dungeons & Dragons and is set in the Forgotten Realms fantasy setting. Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance is a real-time hack-and-slash action role-play game presented in the 3D perspective, the rotatable third-person overhead view. The battle system in the game is simplistic but flexible. Character statistics at the beginning of the game are preset, and the player may only customize their character stats through gaining experience points from winning battles. At specific levels, the character gains new ability points to spend on enhancements specific to their character class. The ability choices affect the subsequent fighting style of the character. Gameplay is linear, and any current quest must be completed successfully before the story proceeds. There are also relatively few non-player characters with whom only those who are part of a quest or side quest may be interacted. Optional side quests are limited, but those that are available help players to gain experience and level up. Weapons, armor, and items are available for purchase from one location at a time and become increasingly expensive as the game progresses. The game includes both a transparent map that covers the entire screen and a mini-map to aid navigation. The game's rule set is based on a limited set of the 3rd edition Dungeons & Dragons rule set. Compared to other D&D games, there are relatively few rules implemented in the game. There are 4 playable classes: Human Arcane Archer, Elven Sorceress, Dwarven Fighter, and Drow Ranger, an unlockable character. Gameplay strategy is different for each character. The human relies on ranged attacks and stealth. The elf can cast magic spells, and the dwarf is an all-around fighter. Through updating each character, the characters can go on to mimic the characteristics of other classes. The game takes place in the Sword Coast and the Western Heartlands, areas in the Faerun continent of Forgotten Realms. Each chapter of the game takes place in a different region. In the first chapter, Baldur's Gate is explored. In the second, the Sunset Mountains, and in the third, the Marsh of Chelimbor. The latter two areas are known to fans previously only as maps. The game's story follows the journey of three characters: Cromlech, the dwarven fighter, Vaughn, a human arcane archer, and Adriana, an elven sorceress, all of whom are playable. An unlockable character, Drizzt Do'Urden, is available to play through the main quest. Is available to play through the main quest after completing the game and a survival minigame. Cooperative gameplay with another player is also available. Both players share the same screen and are thus limited in how far they can move away from one another. The Game Boy Advance version was very scaled down. For instance, there is no choice as to playable characters. Instead, only a human male is available, although his class can be chosen from three available: fighter, wizard, and archer. After the completion of the game, a new class, elven fighter, becomes available. There is no multiplayer mode either. Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance was critically well received. Metacritic recorded average professional review scores of 87, 83, and 79% for PS2, Xbox, and GameCube consoles, respectively. A sequel, Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance 2, was released in 2004.
Yeah, that Dark Alliance 2 was a lot better. It had much more. It was more. You got to pick your class and race separately, you know.
But I found it interesting that. I forget which one. One of the two is playable on the Xbox 360 through backwards compatibility, and the other is not. I found that strange that one would be playable and the other is not.
Well, you know what? Getting back to backwards compatibility, that's one game I play a lot on my 360. It's just that good about Dark Alliance 2. One thing I have to laugh at is the inclusion of Drizzt, because he is basically the Wolverine of AD&D. I mean, he appears everywhere. And a lot of people like him because he's a cool drow fight. He's a cool drow guy who are all evil except for him. He's the one non-evil drow. So, anyways, I never got to play.
Aren't they all the one non-evil drow?
What?
Like all of?
Yeah, they're all non-evil drow except you're getting
every single drow is
the
one.
Yeah, the Order of the Stick. Yes,
the entire race.
Yeah, the Order of the Stick made fun of that, saying that since his popularity, all of them became chaotic good.
Just saying.
Yeah. But, you know, what's interesting is that this game came out just after Diablo 2 came out in 2000. And it proved that you can do an action RPG right, unlike we discussed this last week, the PS2 version, which sucked.
Yeah, the gameplay is very Diablo-esque. I mean, they talk about AD&D 3rd edition rules. I never really saw any evidence of that. I mean, it was a fairly straight Diablo clone.
Yeah. Well, actually, from playing Dark Alliance 2, there was a lot of AD&D stuff in it. So unless Dan has something to say about this game, we're going to move on.
Moving on.
Okay.
Moving on.
So we're going to move on to game.
I will say it was also followed up by a very similar game, Champions of Norrath, that was also very good.
Yeah, you know what was really disappointing, by the way, was that they did the Bard's Tale in this way. And I would have preferred just a straight-up remake of the old Commodore 64 slash
game. Bard's Tale was terrible. It was just terrible. Oh,
I mean, it was funny, but the gameplay was awful.
Bard's Tale was not supposed to be funny.
Well, okay, we're going to move on to game news. This will go to, I think, Dan.
All right. The Last of Us features Naughty Dog's longest ever campaign, and this comes to us from Pixel Enemy. In a quick question about how long Naughty Dog's The Last of Us will be going through its campaign, community strategist Eric Monticelli teased it was their longest ever, although it depends on how you play, quote-unquote. In the new developer diary, Naughty Dog discusses how they approach programming the behaviors of the infected. They're not zombies. The real villain is the fungus, not the people. The reason these aren't zombies? The infected aren't decaying corpses shuffling the streets, but living things coming after you. Of course, it always depends on how you play the game, but the campaign is our longest ever, we believe, quote-unquote. A demo of The Last of Us is included on the God of War Ascension Blu-ray, but may not be playable straight away, although they will be first. The first owners to get the demo will be those who buy the God of War Ascension. The Last of Us releases on the PlayStation 3 on June 14th, having been delayed from May 7th.
You know, I wonder if you should have done a spoiler alert, because knowing that they're not zombies and they're caused by fungi basically gives away a lot of the plot. I mean, I would have rather known that.
I thought we've had that from the trailers, though. I mean,
it's something bad to spoil, though. I mean, isn't the discovery that these are not undead creatures, but people walking around like The Happening, you know, just zombies? Yeah. I mean,
or the crazies.
Yeah. I mean, but the thing is that one thing I'm going to say is that having a game be very, very long isn't necessarily a good thing. Sometimes it'll, you know, if you're playing a long game that's dull, it's like twice as long. It's like, oh, come on, just finish already.
No, I agree with you. It seems like a real shame to waste their big surprise. But I mean, that's kind of it's kind of like, you know, what made the Full Monty not really so popular on Broadway. I mean, you kind of all knew where it was going.
Dude, I don't know. They might have pointed out that these are not, in fact, zombies because people might at a glance go at it and go, oh, more zombies? No, we haven't seen zombies in a game before.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about the Full Monty there, Dan. I was disappointed.
No, we haven't seen the Full Monty in a game before.
Oh, yes, we have.
Oh.
Oh, yes, we have. Unfortunately.
What porn are you playing?
Let's see. There's Grand Theft Auto, The Ballad of Gay Tony. There's also that game in which the player is a naked guy during the entire game. I think it was Rise of Atlantis, if I remember.
Let's not forget Spore.
Well, you're a fun guy. I mean, how's that being naked? Come on.
Hey, I am a fun guy. It's nice to know that my reputation.
No. Actually, I'm sorry, Jordan. I don't include disembodied penises walking around. I'm talking about actual anatomically correct nudity. Okay.
Oh, you take all the fun out of things.
Yeah. Then we'd have to say that Second Life was full of it.
Oh, so that means you exclude naked skins for Minecraft then?
That too, yes.
Dran. Well,
I think he also includes the breaking of the blurry section on The Sims.
Yeah, no, but if you do that, they're just mannequins.
Oh. Well, yeah, but they got a patch for that, bro.
Yeah, I never downloaded that patch. I never needed that.
You lying whore.
Okay, then.
Hostile banter continues. You know what?
I wonder if my wife is aware of that patch, dear. There's a patch for The Sims that takes her away.
That's for The Sims 2, by the way. You can't really do it on The Sims 3.
Yes, you can.
Really?
Hell yeah! You're just not looking hard enough.
It online only?
Yes.
Oh, well.
Actually, you know what I'm more looking forward to from this game is not so much about it's not zombies, but they kind of maybe look like zombies and act like zombies. It's the AI system that they're touting that's going to allow enemies to react realistically to any combat situation they are placed in. I'll believe it when I see it. It would be nice to have AI actually respond to what it is that you are doing or not doing, as opposed to just some predetermined combination of algorithms that would have happened regardless of whether or not you did this, that, or the other thing. Civ 5 artificial intelligence, I'm looking at you.
And yeah, you know, like the AI is the most difficult part of any first-person shooter to get right.
Every time someone says, we have the best AI ever, you're going to have this game in which you have enemies clumping up outside the doorway just trying to get in and not because they're all trying to squish in. It never happens that way. I mean, the best AI I've seen in a game was Half-Life 1, and I can't say Half-Life 2 because the AI stunk in that game, and Halo.
I think to this day the best AI I've ever seen in a game was in the original Pac-Man.
But that led to patterns.
So big deal. There are patterns. People like patterns.
No, Ms. Pac-Man, they broke the patterns. That they would have a slight random reaction so that you couldn't just build, you know, these things. I never understood
that.
When
I say best, I mean most satisfying.
On the next episode of the TDG Gaming Podcast, we will discuss the artificial intelligence in Pong.
No, we're going to continue to discuss full frontal nudity in video games, like in SimCopter. When
they're both great ideas, we should make it naked Pong.
The disgruntled gay programmer decided to have it at one point where you'd have all these guys come out in bikini briefs, and they would all be kissing each other. And I actually stumbled on that.
I know
we've
got to be a gay programmer.
I stumbled on that Easter egg. I had no idea what the hell was going on.
Why had always got to be a gay programmer?
Because he felt
why couldn't it be a straight woman?
No, it was a gay. It was a gay guy who thought that the producer was homophobic, so he took his revenge out in the final code. You can read all about it in a Google search. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item.
I don't even know what we're talking about anymore.
Well, this is huge.
We've wandered far afield.
It's our gift to the 300 episode. Anyways, this is your turn, Paul.
Sony confirms 4K movie service for PS4, and this comes to us from Strategy Informer. Sony has confirmed that the PS4 will feature 4K movies that could eat up as much as 100 gigs of space. Speaking to The Verge, Sony Electronics President and Chief Operating Officer Phil Molyneux.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, I looked at that.
Peter?
Yeah. It's not Peter.
Okay.
No relation.
Chief Operating Officer Phil Molyneux indicated the PS4 will feature movies that could eat up 100 gigabytes plus. But the company is working out ways to make such girth sustainable. Molyneux said that, I love the copywriter we got around here. Molyneux said the company faces, quote, challenges that we have to work through. We've got some very good ideas that will make it a comfortable customer experience.
You know,
I don't know. Hey, Molyneux, here's a challenge that you need to work through. My monthly internet access is $50 a month, and I have 90 gigabytes for that month. So can you help me out with that bandwidth cap?
Well, not only that, but I did some. You have to have a 4K TV set, which the last time I looked, which was last week, the cheapest one I could find was about $13,000 or $14,000. So this seems to be a moot point. You can have a 4K movie, except we can't deliver it to you, and you can't afford a display device that would actually show it to you.
Epic fail. I mean, the only thing that I could even see this making sense from a business standpoint is if they wanted this hardware to be on the shelf for the next 10 years.
Exactly. And I think that's what their plan is. Sony's going to be heavily vested in 4K TVs at some point. And so they want, you can't sell a 4K TV set without content, right?
Yeah. So they want to have a game system for when the price of 4K TVs drops enough to be like, oh, by the way, that PS4 you have sitting around for the last 3 years? Well, it'll work on this TV.
Well, except that the PlayStation 4 is going to support 4K photos and movies, but not games.
Correct. The 4K is for videos and pictures, but it does not do 4K games.
But here,
this has the makings of Epic Fail all over it.
Oh, well, that's not the last of it. From what I understand, the Japanese version of the AFI, American Film Institute, they're transferring all of their movies to digital on 8K, and they believe that 4K will just be a bump in the road, that everything will be 8K. So not only do you have this incredibly expensive technology, but there's a good chance it's going to be like 8-track tapes. It's just going to be a bump in the road, and they're just going to go straight to 8K.
I don't know. I mean, how many more times higher quality is 4K supposed to be than 1080p right now?
It is significantly larger over 1080p, and it is closer to an actual full 35mm frame.
That's 8K.
Okay, so here's
8K is 7680 by 4320. That's 8K.
Okay, and so how many people can really notice the difference most of the time between 720p and 1080p? It's going to be there, but can we really perceive it?
Yes, you can, if you have a big TV.
Well,
if you have a big TV or you're sitting close enough, then there are charts to describe how close you have to be sitting to see the difference.
See, 8K will have 33 million pixels, which means the thing is that, keep in mind, that's close to celluloid. That's close to celluloid resolution. Because the human eye, I think it is around 7680, isn't it? That the human eye can discern.
There was a calculation done on the resolution of reality, and I can't remember what the resolution was, but it was not as absurdly high as you might think it is.
Yeah. I mean, 8K is called.
I've been outside. The graphics were terrible.
Well, I need to get new glasses because my graphics are starting to blur. The thing is that it's called UHD TV 8K. Ultra High Definition TV. So it's gonna be. So they're already. They're already getting ready to skip over 4K. So, like I said, this might be like 8 tracks 8-track cassettes. You know, you may have great sound, great video, but it's going to be like a blip. You know, you just bought your 4K, and guess what? 8K is right here, and everybody's transferring their film to it. On the other hand, it is, you know, I don't know. And you also have the new disk technology as well, so you can store 100 gigabytes on a disk as well. Because like Dan said, you know, it's going to be pretty hard for people to stream that high level of digital video.
I guess Molyneux has not discounted the possibility that they could be distributed on a physical medium in the future as well, but still, getting back to the resolution portion, I mean, hopefully that we would be able to perceive that if, I mean, right now I'm really not interested in an 84-inch television or anything like that. I'm just thinking, like, where the heck am I going to put that? You know what? I'm just going to knock down this wall, and, that, you know, my television is going to look great where that wall used to be. Oh, who cares about that, you know, the structural integrity? But honestly, as long as there's something that there's value to it, I think it's kind of when we were talking earlier this year about the ability to do 3D, right? Just because you can do it doesn't necessarily mean that you should do it. As long as there's something meaningful.
Yeah, I'm looking at you,
The Hobbit. You know, it's just like, hey, guess what? Did you know that if you buy a 4K Sony TV, you can look up the nose of every performer and see all their boogers? Well, you know what? I really don't want to see that.
There's always, you know, there's always the porn standard. You know, if porn companies don't adopt it, it won't happen.
That's true. Porn does drive technology.
You know. And I wonder if those actors want to be in 4K or 8K.
Nothing makes money faster than getting people off.
Hey, just ask VHS.
Seriously, that's why they beat Beta.
Yeah. So
beat Beta, really?
But here's the thing. You know what? I'm willing to bet you that there will be no 4K movies available in the PSN, feature-length movies, for almost the entire lifetime of the PS4. I'm willing to bet you. There'll be almost none. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item.
Yeah, I'm willing to bet that we're going to find a way to somehow incorporate pornography into the next two news items.
We absolutely should.
It'll happen. Someone will accomplish this.
Okay, we're going to move on to the next news item. BioShock Infinite's ending may cause controversy, and this comes to us from PC Gamer.
Okay, ooh. No, wait. Are there any spoilers in this? Because I like BioShock, and I don't want to be borked.
Okay. No, there's no spoilers. Not unless you didn't want to know that people.
It's very vague, Paul.
Don't tell me what the ending is. I'll be very upset.
I don't think it actually tells you what the ending is. It's more a reaction to the ending than the actual ending.
It's sort of like me describing people's reaction to Two Girls, One Cup. You know, I'm not telling what's in it. I'm just telling the reaction of people of it. What? You
know? Okay. And there's the porn angle. Thank you very much.
Is that porn?
Jonah, you roll out all the stops for our very special 300th broadcast. Thank you very much.
Gamers with strong religious background should be warned that the ending of BioShock Infinite may offend their sensibilities, as creator Ken Levine has stated that one artist nearly quit over it. According to Levine, there was a scene in the game at the end where one of our artists got to the point in the game, played it, turned off BioShock, opened up his computer, opened Microsoft Word, and wrote a resignation letter. It had offended him that much. The controversy seems to revolve around the antagonist Comstock and his face and his faith.
Maybe
if
both.
If his face caused controversy, that's a serious problem. Okay, so I realized that there was something I could connect to that was a notion of forgiveness and what an important part of the New Testament and why Christ was such a revolutionary figure, Levine stated. And thinking about how I'd be able to incorporate the power of that notion of Comstock into his world was, to me, the key. Because who hasn't done things that they don't want to be forgiven for? It seems that certain things have been done to make Comstock a more messianic figure. Levine explained, and it occurred to me that I had to figure out why people follow him, and that was the key to his character. Why do people follow him? What does he provide to them? And I struggled with that for a long time because it was obviously an ecstatic religious experience. I'm sorry. And I struggled for that with a long time because an ecstatic religious experience is something that a religious leader provides, but I don't have a connection to as a writer. And it's always felt when you're trying to write something that you have never felt, and that would feel dishonest to me. BioShock Infinite is due to be released on the 26th of March 2013 for PC, Xbox 360, and PlayStation 3.
I'm intrigued, and now I wish to play this game even more.
Yeah.
I wonder if this came leaked to us directly from BioShock makers via PC Gamer.
Well, didn't you speak to Ken Levine, or was it Warren Spector? Paul.
I keep all my conversations private.
I know. No, you've talked about it before. I think it was.
I talked to everyone.
But the thing is that, you know, there's two different things. You know, there's stuff that is really thought provoking. Imagine by John Lennon, and there's stuff that's outright mockery, and I would lump in, say, Penn Jillette with that. If something is thought-provoking, and I know Ken Levine loves to do themes. I mean, his entire thing in Bioshock Infinite that he's discussed from the very start has been that it's like the difference between the people from the haves and have-nots, except the have-nots are just as evil as the haves, you know? Here, you know, if it's thought-provoking and it causes someone with a religious background to really, you know, be disturbed by it, then it's something that, you know, that I would really be interested in seeing.
I'll be interested to see what the reaction is from the religious right when the game comes out. You know, the whole idea of using a charismatic as a central character, either as a hero or a villain, goes back. Well, you could argue it goes back 2,000 years, but you know, the whole notion goes back, at least in popular fiction, to Elmer Gantry in the 20s and 30s. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how much they can get away with and what the reaction is going to be from the straight press.
You know, if there was a resignation over it, I'm willing to bet you that it has sort of like a Jesus was an alien sort of thing, sort of surprise that would make someone who's very religious be offended, maybe.
Or it could be that they play it as this character is actually literally the second coming or something.
That's true. I mean, we can speculate, so it's not a spoiler. So
no.
I mean,
yeah, we have no knowledge of the plot twists in this game. We're just guessing.
Speak for yourself. I mean, no.
Well, also, the recent trailers have been more spoilery than this.
This is why I always have a media blackout when there's a game I'm actually interested in.
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't spoiled the game for me. It's just made me have certain assumptions, you know, that say, okay, and I'm betting this is going to come, and you know, I'm usually right about it. But the thing about me is that I'm not. If I already have the spoiler, it doesn't ruin the experience for me. Thank goodness. You know, because
well, I thought it was interesting, you know, with the Halo games, there were some religious undertones there as well. And
oh, the
it
first
never
one,
really
yes.
played out anywhere.
Well, you know, there's a lot of references. As a matter of fact, Halo 3 ODST, you're actually doing Dante's Divine Comedy without realizing it.
Oh,
going through the nine
that.
Circles of Hell. You look it up, Jordan. Do Halo 3 ODST and Dante's Divine Comedy, and you'll see how it is so integrated into that story.
Maybe I'll have to pick up ODST now.
Yeah.
You know, when I read this story, it actually made me think of, and I know that this is a different gaming genre altogether, but it made me think of Civilization. Surprise. Oh. it made me think of Civilization because Civilization 4 introduced religion, and there was a lot of controversy surrounding, first off, what religions are you going to include and which ones are you going to exclude, and what's the difference going to be? And the approach...
There is none.
They were all the same. The only thing that was different was the label. And then Civilization 5... They added more religions that are represented, and they wanted to make it so that they were all not the same and just different in label. But rather than making any theological distinctions, they made practical decisions so that the efforts are tailored by the players, human and AI alike, based on choices that they made from preset options.
Yeah, I mean, so, like if you're in the middle of a desert, there's one that says you get bonuses for every, what was it, desert square or no?
For every time mana falls from the heavens?
No, yeah, it's plus one faith from every desert hex that's worked by a city. Right. So it's plus one faith, and that's very powerful. But then other times you might not have any desert. You may
have quarries. There's one that has for all the quarries that you have near your main city.
Yep, stone circles. It can be based on terrain, or it can be something more general that ties into the happiness system, into culture. So if they're doing something like that in Bioshock, where, you know, the end, as long as it's more about the gameplay as opposed to pointing specifically.
No, I think this is going to be very specific. This isn't a strategy game. This is a narrative, a direct narrative. By the way, in Civilization V, you didn't even have to go with the name of the thing. You could do Pastafarians, you know, who worship the flying spaghetti monster.
I'm more concerned that out of nowhere an employee would be so offended by something that they would start drafting a resignation letter. That, to me, sounds like a lie.
No, I mean, well, keep in mind, you know how many people are working on this? I mean, I'm pretty sure it's one out of 100. And the thing is, you know, I mean, some people, you know, he could have been very young.
It sounds like it was not developed by a team of a multicultural team of diverse backgrounds.
Yeah, that was appropriate, I guess, for the first Assassin's Creed when you had Muslims versus Christians, right?
Yeah.
But when you get to the American Revolution, who are you offending? some of the Brits might have been offended. Oh, look, we have
Native Americans could have been offended by Assassin's Creed 3.
They prefer to call indigenous peoples. Thank you.
Why? They were never bothered by Natty Bumpo. Why would they be bothered by Connor?
They could very well have been bothered by Natty Bumpo. We don't know.
I don't think so. Especially since it paints the Native Americans in a heroic light.
Yeah, I think this is Jonah's attempt at a segue and was pretty half decent.
Oh,
yeah,
that's right.
But not as tight a thread to hold the show together as porn.
Okay, Jordan, go ahead.
Our next story, Ubisoft confirms Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag. This comes to us from Strategy Informer. Ubisoft has confirmed that Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag is in development and will be released for the PC, PlayStation 3, Xbox 360, and Wii U at the end of this year. And it's actually October 29th, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, they just released the trailer. Actually, the trailer hasn't been officially released. It's officially released tomorrow.
Yeah,
a lot of sites went ahead and broke the NDA.
Yep. The pack shot artwork that Ubisoft has released also confirms that Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag will have the rumored pirate setting. Yes, that's absolutely the case. The PlayStation 3 version will have an exclusive hour of extra gameplay, the same deal offered for the PS3 versions of Assassin's Creed 3 and Assassin's Creed Brotherhood.
Which didn't really help sales. Now, by the way,
I don't remember Brotherhood having an extra hour. I did pick up the PS3 version of Assassin's Creed 3 because of that, though.
It had free DLC. Now, the thing about the Black Flag, so that people know, it's, you know, people think of Raid, but actually, Black Flag, what happens is that ships would run a Black Flag, which would hide their allegiance. Black Flags were used by privateers, were given letters of mark, which meant, essentially it would say, you're allowed to attack ships of this nationality and we'll reward you for it. We won't hold it against you. So basically you'd run up the black flag.
The English would hire privateers to go sink as many Spanish ships as they wanted.
Like Francis Drake. That's an example. And basically it was basically, you know, paying pirates not to attack you without actually saying that. I know Jordan is very interested in this since he's been following Assassin's Creed since number one. And once again, this is again, a yearly thing. I mean, and in this
case, they have multiple teams working on the games. So, you know, Assassin's Creed 3 surprised everybody that it came out so quick after Revelations. And it turned out that the team who worked on 3 had been working on 3 for years to make it ready for release. And the same thing is true with Black Flag. The one thing that surprises me, though, is that they're jumping straight to Assassin's Creed 4. It's more or less the same time zone as 3. It's a couple generations.
I'm not going to say what happens in Assassin's Creed 3, but there's a reason why there's a new character.
Yeah.
And the thing is that...
Oh, my God, the old one died.
You're playing Connor's grandfather in 4.
Yeah, but here's the other thing is that the ship action in Assassin's Creed was everybody's favorite. So basically what they're doing is they're taking the favorite feature from 3 and making a game out of it in 4.
Correct, yeah. But they could have just called it Assassin's Creed Black Flag. They didn't need to append a 4 to it, which is the bit that confuses me.
This tells me that it might be a very different type of game.
It could very well be.
I mean, if one thing, you may not have a lot of climbing buildings and jumping around and all that. I mean, you're piloting ships. I mean, the most you could do is
climbing trees.
You can climb into the crow's nest, but what else? Yeah. I'm willing to bet you that it'll have an advanced sword fighting thing. I mean, Assassin's Creed always been good. It's sort of like Batman, Arkham Asylum, and combat. So I'm willing to bet you that it's going to be about ship combat and swordplay.
Well, in the video, the one thing that I noticed was dual wielding pistols and dual wielding swords. Whether that carries over to the actual game or if that's just for the cutscene, I don't know yet.
I'm pretty sure it's for the game. They wouldn't show that in the debut trailer without it meaning something. Anyways, we're going to move straight to listener feedback, and I know Paul's going to jump right on this. Oh, wait, actually. Dan or Paul, do you have anything to say about Assassin's Creed?
Who cares?
How about you, Dan?
I only bring this up again because I will continue to reiterate important points. Once you've lost a player, you've lost them. So they lost me in the first one because they made the giant mistake of creating a world of mud, and now the entire franchise is dead to me.
Okay.
The first game, in fairness, was very brown. The other unconfirmed rumors that there will be a follow-up on the Vita, there is no confirmation as to what this game will be, but there will be rumor is there will be a second Vita game as well.
How about you, Dan?
I'm just going to take bets, friendly bets, about whether this game is going to take place in the Jamaica, Bahamas, Cuba, Mexico, England, or somewhere else in the world. Does anyone want some of this action?
Like, it could be like Sid Meier's Pirates, in which you had to go everywhere in the Caribbean. But it seems like it's taking place in the Caribbean because you have Blackbeard. And that's
uninterested.
And although, you know, it would be interesting if you could go everywhere, but I think it's going to be stuck in the Caribbean. Anyways, we're going to move on to listener feedback, and I know Paul is going to be delighted at reading this one because he gets to do something he hasn't done in a long while.
Ooh! Okay. This comes to us from our friend, Max Dominic. Hey guys, been too long. I've changed career paths during and before that time. I hope it wasn't to become an English teacher, Max. So the PS4 plans are out. What features do you think will be most prominent?
Okay, so let's go around. Jordan, how about you?
I think the big thing is going to be following through on the promises from the PS3, namely getting 60 frames per second on all games and things of that nature.
What better with that, with the processor they're having?
Yeah.
How about you, Dan?
Just the ongoing question of backward compatibility, because there are a lot of people. Well, I hope that they change their mind on that. I'm holding out hope, and I know it's very thin, faint hope, but I would hope that they would do that, because I think that would get a lot of people who have a very extensive PlayStation 3 library to go, okay, and then once you've got them playing their PlayStation 3 games on the PlayStation 4, they can be like, you already have a PlayStation 4 now, why don't you buy a PlayStation 4 game, or 2, or 3, or 20?
Unfortunately, I think Sony's going to say, oh, you already have that PS3 game, well, why don't you buy it again on PSN?
Yeah, the architecture is too different. It's not going to happen.
Yeah. How about you, Paul?
Well, Max Dominic, I think what would be a really great thing to do was if they had a credit card swiper right on the controller, because that way, you know, you can just buy shit and swipe your credit card and not have to go through like 9 different account setups.
Actually, mine is related to yours, Paul. I was going to say the DualShock 4, because it's going to be sort of like a Vita on a controller, basically. That's what they're doing with it. They're going to have the touch screen on the top and the regular controls on the side.
Wait, it's going to be like Eva Peron? Okay. Oh, never mind.
Yeah, I gotcha.
You guys are going to get that.
Yes, ball. I know. Evita. Yes, we got it. So,
she was terrible in that movie.
Now, you realize now that Jonah's obligated to close out the podcast by his rendition of Don't Cry For Me, Argentina.
And let's pretend I didn't not.
Yeah, please. Anytime Jonah has to sing. Ouch.
Okay.
Wait a minute. Did you just say let's pretend I didn't not?
Forget. Okay.
Yes, another one who shouldn't be switching career paths to English teacher.
Okay, Dan, yours next.
This comes to us from Hair Alien. At Sony unveils PlayStation 4 at See the Future. Hey, Radeon and games do go together. I'm using Radeon cards since 2004, and I didn't run into any issues. at Sony, pre-owned game blockage up to publishers on the PS4. Translation, we're just going to give the publisher all the tools they need in order to block used games so that you'll not blame us. Despite the fact that it's our hardware and we're the guys developing those tools. Right. At fans express outrage at offline and LAN play for a console version of Diablo 3. Outrage? Why? Sure, they did give PC gamers enough reason to be upset, but outrage? I, for once, vote with my wallet. And at question of the week and question of the week from last week.
Okay, so the question of the week was, what was the first video game magazine or website that you really enjoyed?
And Hair Alien's response was planetavp.com, but of course.
That's Planet Aliens versus Predator. When you had all the planets, you had Planet Doom, you had Planet Quake, you had Planet... you actually had Planet Civ, you had Planet Kohan. And I think Planet Quake was the one that started it all, too.
Yes, and where did we find all of these planet sites?
From GameSpy, if I remember correctly.
Oh, you are
which
correct.
Which was also actually... They actually came from File Planet, which was related to GameSpy, but still. Since we're on the subject, how about you... Oh, wait. Why am I even asking this? I think I already know. Well, maybe I don't. Go ahead, Dan.
My answer is Game Center, actually, which really? Between...
I remember, yes. Yes, I remember that. Wow, that was an old... I even forgot it existed.
Yeah, it was CNET's gaming portal that competed directly with GameSpot between 1995 and 2001, and then it was purchased and absorbed into GameSpot. And I always preferred Game Center over GameSpot, not just because of the layout... Oh, GameSpot. Oh, pain. Physical pain. But I found that the quality of the articles was higher on Game Center. Not as many, but I also appreciated that because I felt like I could go on to Game Center and I could absorb something and not feel completely overwhelmed and inundated. But you know what? I've gotten over it, but I still remember you, Game Center, even though that was more than 10 years ago. I will place a flower at your grave.
There is a Game Center, but now it's GameFly and it's an iOS app.
Yeah,
but it actually takes the news from Shaq News.
So. It's not as bad as the brief failed effort to bring MicroProse back under the same name, but that's a whole other conversation, and I can't believe you made me think of it.
What about a Politan?
What about a Politan? That wasn't the first site that I visited.
Well, I'm not asking the first site, the first one you enjoyed, but I guess...
My head hurts.
Oh, no, it wasn't the first site that I enjoyed because I had a website before that, and I visited websites before that on top of it. So it was not the first, but of course it is always a love, and I'm only slightly biased seeing as how, you know, I co-founded it.
You know, I should have mentioned Blues News, although it wasn't the first, but it's the one that I first went to, and it's still around that you... all the news from, because they're very good at aggregating news, especially PC news, but they do console as well. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next letter from Paweł Pretke. Oh, it sounds like someone from Eastern Europe. Hey guys, long time, first time. At Sony reveals PS4 at See the Future. I don't really understand why Paul is so upset about Sony not showing the actual console. They told us some details about the specs, so what difference does it make how it's going to look like? Maybe it's the PS fanboy in me speaking, but I really enjoyed most of the show. I like the idea of integration of the PS4 with the Vita, which I own and which is not dead, as you like to say. Wink. I like the idea of Gaikai being an integral part of the system. I like share button, etc. The tech demos were mostly unimpressive, especially the media molecule move thingy. But Quantic Dream's old man demo was amazing. Speaking of old man nostrils. I agree with knowing the price levels of the new hardware will be nice, but I understand that there are some things that to be solved on the Sony part and simply not reasonable to more or less guess the price at this moment. Now, one thing about that, and I learned that having that extra, you know, 4 gigabytes of DDR5 is basically the equivalent of adding a $300 graphic card in your system, right? Extra. Imagine a couple million of those 300 graphic cards. How much Sony's going to have to pony up, you know? At Sony, pre-owned blockage up to publishers on PS4. I also believe the idea of getting a reactivation code from Sony or the game publisher is a good one. Even if it comes to that, the games will be blocked, which I don't think is a real threat for now. As you mentioned, the fact that people are not buying new games now doesn't mean that they'll once the used game blocking is implemented, they'll wait for price cuts and that's all. It's the same story with movie and music piracy and how much the companies are losing to it. They always assume that people will buy the original CD, DVD if it wasn't available for download. Pavel, I'm just going to say one thing. I hope nothing happens to your PS4 if they do have that sort of system, because you'll find it incredibly frustrating when these games all of a sudden say, wait, that's not the PS4 we were locked to. What are you doing? You can't have it on another PS4. You have to reactivate the code. Give us money. Rumor, Microsoft revealing next gen console in April. I wonder if we'll see a larger difference between the Xbox 720 and the PS4 than in the current generation. Sony's conference focused mainly on games in which, while the additional content was only briefly mentioned, I don't own Xbox, but my impression is it puts more emphasis on additional content, i.e. not games, and maybe the new iteration will move on in that direction. From what I understand, the Xbox 720, or whatever they're going to be called, is probably going to be something like 15 to 20% less powerful, but they're going to focus less on the GPU. I mean, not less powerful. I mean, graphic intensive. But they're going to focus on the GPU and focus more on the processing. So what happens is that you can have better graphics faster on the PS4, but the Xbox 360 will be a faster machine and be able to do more processing power than the PS4. So they're both.
It'll be interesting to see how it shakes out. Yeah, I think the next generation is actually going to be closer than this generation.
But you know what? I've never really, you know, worried that much about resolution. I mean, yeah, so what if Halo 3 wasn't in 720p? I don't care. You know? I mean, look at the Wii when it was selling. I mean, no one cared about the processing power. Yes, I know your complaints about it, Jordan, but the thing is that, you know, people were not turned off by the lack of graphics. They were turned off by lack of software. You know,
I was going to say, but I care.
No, but it, you know, it, the thing that damaged.
You're not a person, Jordan. How many times do we have to tell you that?
I'm just going to say the problem with the Wii wasn't the fact that it had, you know, lower graphics. The problem with it was that the third party software wasn't there, and they turned off the core crowd. You know, that's what happened. I mean, they had it. You know, if they had taken these, you know, the casual gamers, you know, these casual people who never owned a console before, and put them in a category and left them in that category and knew who their core audience was and catered mostly to them but also a little bit to the casual, you know, I think we already discussed this today. I'm not going to discuss it again.
Yeah, we're already off topic. Let's just finish up with the letters.
At the question of the week, I'm from Poland, Eastern Europe. And the one magazine I've subscribed to for several years has been CD Action. They always put full games on their CDs and later DVDs, and the reviews and additional in-magazine materials were of high quality. I mean, I remember when PC magazines started doing that in the mid-2000s. Like, I believe it was Computer Gaming World that started including the entire Ultima 4, the entire Ultima 5, the entire Wizardry 6 on their CD, which is great. Anyways, we're going to move on. This is Jordan.
From Arthur the Fifth at Sony's Blind Vision of Future.
Yeah, stayed up until. So we have someone who's really enthusiastic about the PS4, and now on the flip side.
let's differentiate from viewer opinion versus show opinion. Contents of letters may or may not, conform to the views of the VGRT Gaming Podcast.
Powell is really enthusiastic about the PS4. Now, Arthur V is going to slam it.
From Arthur the Fifth, at Sony's Blind Vision of the Future, stayed up till 1 a.m. to watch most of the show. It was very developer-centered. If you don't get off at PC specs, it was mostly irrelevant. PS4 has few interesting ideas, share button, but like many others, I see it as bringing up the PlayStation to the speed of the Xbox. As someone who's had an Xbox 360 for 3 years before the PS3, I found Sony's console a step backwards. Crappy online, no integrated party system or chat, and a cross-media bar which loads every time you access it. PlayStation 4 is effectively getting everything that the Xbox 360 had in 2006. Overall, I have seen Sony's future, and I'm not tempted to be a part of it. At New Xbox Rumors, it would make sense for them to show it off in April. Sony jumped the gun to grab the spotlight before E3, and now Microsoft has to make a move. I have high hopes for the Xbox. So far, the future generation looks a lot like yesterday. Fingers crossed Microsoft will impress us with its show. Otherwise, things will be looking bleak for the console gaming world. At fans,
before you move on. It's very interesting about the Xbox 720. From what I understand, they're hitting heavy on sound. They're going to have 200 sound what are they called again? Where you have 200 things going at once.
I don't know. I haven't paid any attention to the rumor.
But here's the thing. It's going to support 7.1 and 8.1 sound. And a lot of it is because of Kinect. It's going to take up like a gigabyte of RAM on the system architecture. So they're really hitting hard with Kinect.
Gotcha.
And let me ask you a question. When was the last time anybody ever stressed the sound a system does? You know, the sound.
You know what? I always turn the sound off and I watch a movie or I listen to my own damn music.
Okay.
I could think of maybe games on one hand that I actually listen to the sounds that are made.
Really?
I enjoy surround sound gaming. My 6.1 tuner burned up and I have not replaced it. I was out looking at 7.1s today.
Well, how about an 8.1, Jordan?
Well, an 8.1 I don't have the speakers for, but I could do the speakers for a 7.1.
I mean, does that excite you, Jordan, having 7.1 surround?
7.1 surround sound would be a good thing to have. I would like to have 7.1 on a gaming system, yes.
Okay. Moving on.
And you see, for myself, I would enjoy that sound too if it happened to be that I was playing a game that relied on or I felt that the experience was enhanced by the sound. For example, Civilization, they've had some great soundtracks, but I listened to it for a little while and then I turn around and listen to something else. Mm. A game like Minecraft, for example, I need the sound on because that alerts me to dangers.
Yeah, well, that's a lot of action games in which a lot of people have, even especially in multiplayer, if you have that surround sound, you can hear someone behind you to your right, you can just pop them before they even know that they're there.
Correct. So a 7-1 system would have 3 speakers in the front, 4 speakers in the back, plus a subwoofer.
Mm. Now moving on.
At fans express outrage at Diablo 3. Diablo 3 was out.
owned.
At GameSpy, goodbye. I used to play PC games online, but it never worked for me. It became largely irrelevant when Steam appeared. Steam has its own integrated system, which allows you to fail to play games online without exiting the game. Progress.
And just before you go on to the question of the week, a brief aside trivia. I briefly wrote for GameSpy, I actually had to handle Kool-Aid. It's true. As long as GameSpy is still around, you could probably find it. I did a few interviews for them. The only site that I've... Gaming site that I've written for.
GameSpy is dead
now. How many jokes about drinking the Kool-Aid did you get?
I actually didn't get any of those jokes. It was actually a nickname I had in elementary school because I would wear, I would have a red shirt and red pants, and then green shirt and green pants. And I also have red hair. So, it was the whole package.
Kids can be so cruel. Man?
Well, at least they didn't say you were a soulless ginger. I mean, that was way before that started.
Oh, no, I got Carrot Top, though.
Oh, that's even worse, actually, because he's just terrible. He's not only a terrible comedian, he's a terrible person. So,
at question of the week, I started using GameSpot around 2005. Since I was poor, I would only buy games after ensuring they are good, i.e. reading reviews. GameSpot was a good source. Stopped me from making a lot of stupid mistakes. It is often unnecessarily harsh, but I like it nevertheless. I still use it because it has good mobile website that I can read it anywhere via 3G.
Okay, so that's always good advice to check reviews before you buy. Anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast or the forums at gamingpodcast.net/forum or send us your comments to fans@gamingpodcast.net. If you're into casual gaming, check out casualgamerchick.com. You could also check out our gaming news at gamestooge.com. Also, subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. So that ends our 300th episode. There will not be an episode next week because Jordan has to have surgery.
Hi, Jordan.
Now, I will be back. I'm just expect to be unconscious next weekend.
So instead, we're going to be running our infamous Doctor Who outtakes. They're basically two long outtakes after the end of shows. One was basic Doctor Who discussion, and the other one was the Christmas episode, I think.
Yes. And you know what? And the new episodes start airing on March 30th, so we should, we should probably air that before.
Well,
then.
You and Dan can record it and have.
No, I mean, we should probably air our Doctor Who conversations before there's new content to be added to the Whoosphere.
Well, yes, and Jonah has just committed to that. Well, and to our listeners too, there'll be public accountability. He said that it will be released next week.
Yeah.
I just want to point out, by the way, that I came up with the word Whoosphere.
Really? I don't know. It sounds like something that's been used before.
No, you're thinking blogosphere.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
So anyway. No, Jonah, it's the horosphere.
Get it? Whore. Get it?
Yeah. Anyways. So thanks for listening.
You guys are lame.
300th episode. And you know what? The question of the week will be, what was your favorite moment in the TD Gaming podcast over the years? I think that's an appropriate question of the week.
Aww.
Yeah. And then ask us any question you like.
Yeah, seriously, we need your questions.
I mean, actually someone did ask a question. You know.
Ooh, what was the question? What was the question?
Max Dominic asked the question, remember? He asked us what we thought
Buddy Max Dominic.
Yeah. He asked that. And to answer
somebody's comments from earlier, because I was tuning out, somebody else was reading copy. I didn't have a problem with not being shown the physical PS4 console. I'm just saying that the entire presentation as a whole reeked of not being ready, and that was just one example. The same way that, like, they didn't have a price or a set of launch titles.
You know what was also interesting is right afterwards, we had the Destination PlayStation event down there in Arizona, and there was not a lick of news that came out of Destination PlayStation. Not one word. And that one was for retailers. That's very scary.
Yeah, I think the problem with them not showing what... I mean, they didn't even know what size hard drive they were going to have. They just said, we're going to have a hard drive. Oh, wow. You know, the thing is that those specs can change, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, the whole, this entire, the Sony Wonder, the news conference that they had was just basically a confirmation of like, yep, we're still in the hardware business.
I'm willing to bet you if Microsoft comes out and says they have a $299.99 edition of their console, Sony's going to be, is going to change those specs really quickly. I mean, there have been dev kits that have been out there, but those dev kits are very mutable. You know, they can say, well, you know what, tone them down to just 4 gigabytes of RAM, you know, instead of the 8 gigabytes of RAM. I mean, there's, you know, what makes me laugh is they say that, well, a lot of the developers really want, developers always want more RAM. You know, they won't be satisfied with 8 RAM like 6 months after you've released the console. They'll say, we want 16 RAM. We've used up all of the memory. We want more. You know, developers are never satisfied. Isn't that right, Paul?
Well, you know, I don't write code. I just design things. So
that's true.
I work with what you give me.
Yeah.
It's the coder's job to go, no, Paul, we can't do that. I'm like, what do you mean you can't hack into the Pentagon? That's how the game works.
Yeah. So anyways, everybody, let's thank Dan for coming back for an episode.
Yay, Dan, we like you.
Well, thank you for having me back. I'm glad I was able to be back on for episode 300. That was my intention. And I also promised I wouldn't forgive myself if, seeing as how I was back for episode 300, I didn't say, VGRT Gaming Podcast! There wow. You go.
Should I give a shout out to...
Was that from Dan Versus?
I don't know. I don't know if that was a reference or not. I mean,
is that a reference to Dan Versus? Because if so, I should make you a brownie.
It's my
new favorite TV show.
Oh, no, it wasn't, actually. It was a parody of 300, but you can still make me a brownie if you want.
You know.
Oh, okay. And I highly advise everybody to watch Dan Versus because it's just funny.
By the way, you can still listen to Dan on the Polycast, which is at http://thepolycast.net.
Oh, yes, at thepolycast.net. Yes, that... It's funny you mentioned the address because on the show, I've been said that I say the website address too much. So I enjoy other people saying the address instead of me. Thanks, Jonah. Yes, Dan, we know. It's at thepolycast.net, at thepolycast.net. Do you want to say thepolycast.net one more time? Well, yes, I do.
Thepolycast.net.
I don't listen to podcasts. I just star in them.
Yeah. Anyways, listen, next week, enjoy Doctor Who. It's going to be a discussion between Paul, Dan, and Jennifer, who's out there in the background. I only watch the Doctor Who on occasion, especially when my friend comes. And, you know, the funny thing is that, you know, Doctor Who is nice in that you can watch a single episode, get everything that's going on, and not have to worry about what happened before or after, for the most part. You know,
yes, unless you're self-contained episodes. A Whedon-esque season arc.
Oh, well, as long as you listen to an episode now and again, Jonah, you can stay.
I think the last one I saw was the one with the fat coming out of people's body and walking around.
Oh, the adipose.
Oh.
The adipose.
You can buy those toys, by the way.
The little stress squeeze ball adipose toys.
Yeah, but even in that episode, they tease the bigger setup for the whole season.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is our squeeze toy ending, and we'll see you 2 weeks from now. In the meantime, enjoy the Doctor Who episode next week, and we'll see you later.
Bye, Bonds.
Game on.
Good night, everybody.